What's up, everybody? This is Joffer Papa Pump Penizai, a.k.a. I'm a pussy pirate. They call me Jack Sparrow. Pull down my pants. You can see my flesh arrow with my main man, John DeMatt Maz. What's up, buddy?
I never have anything to goddamn say to with your goddamn intros. Jesus Christ, bro. Almighty.
So what are we talking about today, buddy?
So, guys, we got a little bit of a kind of a question that's been coming up on the website, facebook.com/badguymuaytai. Kind of to expound on what we had talked about on our previous podcast, people are wanting to know what to look for, what are some good qualities in a martial arts school. And we talk about martial arts school that encompasses everything. It could be a jiu-jitsu school, judo dojo, karate, taekwondo, western boxing, Thai boxing, any martial art. It could even be yoga. I think some of these things could fit in there too. Joff, what do you think about that and your experience and your travels around the world?
So I would say the first thing you got to look for is the quality of instruction, and the quality of instruction really does depend on your teacher. So it's the lineage. You want to know what your instructor's lineage is. You want to know if it's legitimate or not, because a lot of people have false certifications, false stories. So you want to know what the individual's legit legacy, legit teaching lineage is, and as well as their ability to pass that knowledge on efficiently. I think that's a really important part of finding a perfect dojo.
Now, where could you find some of this information?
I mean, this is the age of Google. Let's be for real. This is the age of Google. The guy that I consider a mentor to me, Eric Haycraft, you search him online, you find videos with him and Ramon Deckers, Cora Hemmers. I mean, videos don't lie. Photos don't lie. So when you see stuff like that, then you go take his class and you see his ability to break down the technique. It just shows a legitimacy. So if you can't find something on somebody online, or if there's no substantial proof, if all there is a certification with a squiggly line signature, you know, it's fishy. That's what I would say.
What are some other things to look for? I mean, in my travels, one of the other things that I think is very important is maybe the quality of the gym. I mean, you don't want to be training somewhere that looks unsafe, maybe has old, possibly disease-infected equipment. You need to look out for MRSA and staff, make sure the gym is cleaned regularly. There's nothing better than walking into a gym that smells like fresh bleach.
I mean, I'll tell you what, that's such a good point, bro, because one of the reasons why I stopped jiu-jitsu is I got a form of staph called impetigo all over my face and body. And, I mean, I was a leper. I mean, even my own girlfriend, my mother, they were disgusted by the sight of me because of these huge...
They still are.
Oh, I know. I look at myself and I want to slap myself in the mirror. And, it's just you don't want to be that guy who literally is in quarantine for 2 weeks because that specific instructor didn't mop the mat. And I know what school it is, but I'm not going to put him on blast. affiliate of...
Yeah, I mean, all those things are a huge quality. Another thing, too, is you want to look at your training partners. If you walk into a gym and you see crutches, slings, braces, lots of dudes with no teeth. Now, it is a combat sport. These things do happen. But do you want to be training with guys who are literally breaking each other? No. You want to be able to do this sport or this hobby for your whole life. So, I mean, are these guys savage beasts? I mean, there's some places if you want to go and have that kind of training camp or have that kind of facility, you can. But if you're the casual martial artist, the weekend guy, you don't want to be training with the dudes that are going to rip your arm off or, you know, punch you 100% every time you're sparring.
You know, I would say also, too, is the kind of atmosphere you have at the gym makes you stay long term. So what I find very important is an instructor that's able to get personal with his students and, you know, within good reason. I mean,
what kind of personal?
You know what I mean? No, the kind of instructor that he has UFC fight nights, the kind of instructor that sees you more than...
So it's more like a friends and family atmosphere, a place you can go hang.
You know, exactly. You know, they're friendly with you and they genuinely care that you're a part of the gym, as well as other students that want to be a part of a community. I mean, in the fight game, the issue is you have a bunch of fighters who don't really want to be social with one another. And that's a problem because then you miss that camaraderie aspect. The martial arts is amazing because it unifies you. You have blood, sweat, and tears together, and it's your chosen family. So I think if you want to be doing martial arts for the long term, you got to be somewhere where the atmosphere is, this is more than a fight gym. This is where you will make connections that, you know, you'll see Mike or Tom or whoever it is as a brother and or sister.
Now, we talked about gym hopping on last episode. How can we make something like that happen if we're kind of bouncing from gym to gym? We see as like you were here last week, but now you're somewhere else. Now you're disloyal, disrespectful.
I mean, let's clarify that question real quick. So you're saying, what can you do to kind of keep somebody from gym hopping?
No, I'm saying, if you are gym hopping, can you still build that camaraderie and personal relationships that you just spoke on with some of your other gym members? Because I know a lot of people say, I'm on team X, Y, and Z.
No, you're that's a good question, and I'll this is what I would say. Every gym I've gone to, I may not be 100% cool with the coach because, of course, he's monetarily invested in me in the sense that, you know, I pay him the mat fee, I pay him the monthly whatever it may be, but every single competitor on that team, every single student, all they can say is, wow, Jaffa is such a good dude. You know, he helped out everybody he could. So guys, if you're jumping around this and that, your goal is just to be good to everybody. I mean, I've made connections with people, you know, on my hops across the gym world. That are going to last forever because I was good to them. They were good to me, and they see down deep, wow, this guy's a good guy. And, you know, I've got relationships with some of these coaches that I'm still cool with, the ones that saw me more than just as a paycheck. So it really depends. All I have to say is if you're going to gym hop, you want to make connections with people, be good to everybody. That's the number one thing I would say. Be good for goodness sake.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Is if you do decide to balance from gym to gym, I don't disagree with that at all. What I do disagree with is you being disrespectful to the new place that you go to. Always go in, introduce yourself, offer to pay. Some gyms will not take your money. Be kind and courteous because in a combat sport, if you are disrespectful, the next guy will not say anything to you. He will choke you out, or he might break your arm, or he might knock you out. So sometimes it's a little bit of passive-aggressive face-to-face, but you have to remember there is some sort of, you know, underlying retribution. Not all the time, but sometimes it does happen, and that is something you need to be aware about. Joff, what do you think about some other things to look for in a gym as far as, like, instruction? What kind of a curriculum or what kind of a class structure should they have?
Before going to curriculum, I just want to say one more thing about the gym hopping that just popped in my mind. If you guys look at a normal – of course, this rant's a little off topic. I'll get right back on it. If you go to college, you don't have one professor for – even just say a course like anatomy, physiology – you don't have one professor for your whole collegiate career. So think about it as if you're going to get better at a martial art, you need to have a level one instructor, level two instructor, level three. Every single instructor you have is kind of a progression to get you to a higher level. When you look at gymnastics, I have a good friend, Rick Scarpino, who that's exactly what they do at the gymnastics place. You have a beginner, intermediate, advanced, and then a potential Olympic coach. So we're the only sport that doesn't promote that concept of once you reach one level, you go to another master instructor. So I just wanted to give that piece. So
I totally agree with you, though.
And could you shoot that question to me one more time because my pea-sized brain missed it?
Yeah, what do you think are some class structures and things to look for because I think a lot of people when they go to a school for martial arts, they say, this one's near my house, this will be the best for my commute, but they don't. What I would consider is they're not trying out places. If you are going to go try at a new school, because they do work for you, you're employing them, what are some things in the curriculum and what are some things as far as how class structure should be that you should be looking for?
Well, everything has to be taught in a progression. You know, let's say you're in a, let's talk about jiu-jitsu. If you're in a beginner jiu-jitsu program, white belt to first off, green belt's a made-up rank. I want to make that official, so if you hate me for it, you know, it's too bad.
I agree.
You know, green belt's actually a children's rank that they started implementing at schools so they can test you and make
money. It's a judo rank, too.
Yeah, well, it's a normal judo rank, but of course, I mean, what I'm talking about is just pure jiu-jitsu where real jiu-jitsu is white-blue, and now they started employing green, which is a way to test you and make money off you, which, you know, suck my nuts. I'm sorry. It pisses me off.
Hey, man, I was a green belt at one time.
And I told you to suck my nuts.
These nuts.
So what I'm saying now is
it's okay.
That
I'm okay with that, though.
White belt level. So I'm okay with the stripe concepts. White to a four stripe white belt. You have that beginner program. Maybe even some blues because basics are fundamental. And they have a progression where they teach you to crawl. You know, let's just use that analogy. They teach you to crawl, then you're going to walk. They have something that really, if you want to get to blue belt, they basically lay the foundations of everything you need to properly get to blue belt. And then after that, they have an intermediate class. I don't like when they mix blue with black. I think there should be an intermediate in between there. I believe Henzo's does this. It's like a blue to purple because that's the time where you really start sharpening yourself and growing in your craft. And they properly get you ready to be a brown belt and have the skill set to be a really good teacher. So then you have your brown to black. And then you have your mixed level, which is basically everybody. You need to have classes like that, of course. But you have that segregation in rank where they have a game plan and a curriculum. And this is what you need. Excuse me. This is what you need to be successful and get to that rank on time in a good fashion. So that's what you need to look at, not just like a mishmash of techniques, not a class that doesn't know how to utilize time efficiently.
No, I just like to make a little comment on that. I've trained at a few different jiu-jitsu associations, and one of the best run, I think, programs was Gracie Baja. Not that I'm plugging them, but I think that they had a great idea where they would say, this month is half guard, or this month is side control.
Now, did they have a different lesson plan per rank?
It was a similar situation where they did have beginner class and then they had the intermediate classes, not the intermediate with the purple belt and blue belts together without the black belts, but they had the intermediate to advanced class. But what they did have is they had a structured program for the entire month. So if it was one position, it would be one position and it would just tree branch off of all those positions. So you would start off in, say, side control. Then you would learn submissions, movements, different positioning, escapes, everything from that position. And it would just branch from there.
You know,
which I thought was a good idea because you knew what you were doing for that whole month. And everything would kind of compound and build on it. Not just going to class, okay, one day we're going to learn this. Next day we're going to learn that. The day after this, we're going to learn that. Like some schools have no set curriculum and no set progression. It's just like, oh, what does the one dude feel like teaching today? Oh, we're gonna do a half hour of shrimps.
No, I agree with you. I like that concept of making a specialty per the month, or most people have a really short attention span, so maybe every 2 weeks. The thing that I got to agree with you with Gracie Baja is that they have everything in a curriculum form. When I went to do Thai boxing, Dutch style Thai boxing at in Kentucky with Real Fighters Gym, Eric Haycraft's gym, there was a syllabus. There was a reason, a rhyme or reason why we were doing something. It built up to another progression. Once you got good, you graduated to the next progression. So if you're at a school that doesn't have a set of skill sets that you need to acquire, you're just basically wasting time. And even more kickboxing, let's say we just talked about jiu-jitsu with kickboxing. The issue is you run into a modified pad class, which is just, okay, we're just going to get you sweaty and teach you really crappy technique. And those kind of classes...
Cardio kickboxing. You can go to your local global gym for that.
Yeah, exactly. So realize when you're being played. If you're not actually learning and progressing to get efficient at sparring, Muay Thai is a combat art. Jiu-Jitsu is a combat art. The one thing Muay Thai doesn't do that Jiu-Jitsu does very well, you need to be rolling / sparring frequently. That's the application of the art. Now, I know a lot of people are scared to spar and scared to do more contact, but I'm sorry, you're not doing the art to its full extent. Maybe you can spar lighter, maybe you can roll lighter, but you need to be doing the application of the art or you're just doing it for cardio, and that's fine if that's all you're doing
it for. If you want to just go for a workout and you're maybe you're a student and you have no desire to fight or you're a mom or a dad, you just want to go get a good workout.
But it's not even for fighting. Fine. If you want to learn the true art, I mean, Maz, how can you get good at jiu-jitsu if you don't roll?
I mean, I think there's another part of that, too, is how can you get good at jiu-jitsu when jiu-jitsu is based on a self-defense system?
Absolutely.
And I talk about this ad nauseum because most jiu-jitsu schools do not teach self-defense. Gracie combatives was taught in the military and used by everybody else. I mean, jiu-jitsu self-defense is what the art was made for. This, all this sports stuff now is just completely different.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. You know, I think the issue that we're running into right now is that all these martial arts... Now, I got to say, Muay Thai is defined as a sport. Point blank, Muay Thai... The combatives form is Muay Boran, but Muay Thai is more for sport application. But talking about jiu-jitsu, you're absolutely right. I mean, there's people... I've had the most ignorant statements made by brown belts that go, I really don't know what I would do in the street. I'd probably jump guard. And I said, really? So as this individual's six friends stomp your face while you're on the ground, even though you think you can use that person as a human shield, that's ignorant. That's the most ignorant thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it before and we talk about it again. There's a difference between a combative martial art and a sport martial art.
Now, okay. Don't get me wrong. A sports martial art can get you good in a one-on-one fight.
I agree 100%.
But how often is a fight one-on-one?
I mean, usually never. If you grow up on the Jersey Shore and you go out at the bar at 12 o'clock at night and everybody's been doing $2 Jaeger shots all night long, it's never a one-on-one
There's
fight.
There's a good chance if you fight with John Maz, you're going to fight with Papa Pump, point blank.
There you go, and that's how we roll. But at the same token, that's another point to look for kind of in summation for your school is, are you going for a cardio workout, or are you going for sport, or are you going for self-defense? If you're going for self-defense, make sure your school does teach that. If you're going for cardio, make sure your school does teach that. Make sure they have a curriculum, and make sure it's not too expensive for what you're paying for. If you're paying $200 a month and you can only go two or three times a week, you might want to reevaluate how much you're getting, you know, per class, per cost.
And you know, it's another issue too. I have to say, you have to teach a martial... You have to go to a school that is actually... has a lesson plan. And when I say that, I mean, there's a lot of McDojos out there that are doing a blend of martial arts. I'm not going to say mixed martial arts. A mix of martial arts. And it's such a clusterfuck that you don't get good at anything. You're literally... You're less than mediocre at everything. So you're doing 1 week you're doing board breaking, the next week you're doing stick fighting, the next week you're doing kickboxing, the next week you're doing grappling. So you know what you just did? You diluted everything and you got good at nothing. And you know, I'm gonna say it because people know me, I'm a nice guy, but
bad
I don't
guy.
Hold, I'm a nice bad guy. I don't hold back punches. Where I worked, Satori Academy in Edison in Milltown,
we're gonna get sued.
I don't care. That it's the most watered-down curriculum you could ever be a part of. And honestly, for a school to say that, you know, our curriculum is going to give you everything, you got to kind of scratch your head on that and go, but how can I get good at
but
everything?
But are they really?
Yeah. I mean, we had black belts who, I love these guys, but on the street, a normal assailant is going to take them out because we're doing a 10-minute segment on self-defense. Is that really going to make you good at self-defense?
No, I agree, and it's twofold with your martial art. Is it real-world applicable, and are you getting what you want out of it as far as health and fitness-wise? So that's something you need to consider for yourself. Do you want to go do Krav Maga and beat the shit out of your friends for 2 hours and, like, probably get a broken nose or a broken hand, you know, which does happen, because Krav Maga, they go full clip. Those guys don't hold back.
Well, I'll say, you know, I think, you know, you went directly to the source. I mean, we know where you did Krav Maga. I think if you go to a school that wants to teach it any more, I mean, Krav Maga is a hardcore martial art, but
oh, I agree,
there's ways teachers can make it that, you know, a 50-year-old woman can go there and learn it for their purpose, which is defending their life without getting busted. So I don't think that's necessarily true that every Krav Maga place is...
No, you're right. But at the same time, it's like, do you want to practice something real world, real speed, so then if it does happen real world, real speed, you're prepared for it? I mean, we roll jiu-jitsu or box sometimes, spar, real pace.
So oh, absolutely.
If a punch or a kick or a choke or submission or a takedown comes at you at real speed or real pace, you are... You know, you've seen it before. It's not a surprise.
Absolutely. You know, this is my opinion on self-defense. If your intent, I mean, anything you do is intent-based. What do you want to do? You want to get good at cardio? You want to, you know, it's all your intent with there. But right now we're talking about self-defense. And if your goal is self-defense, Jesus, if you're not throwing a punch or a kick full force, you're not really training self-defense. Anybody can tell you, oh, well, you know, I hit the bag full force. Does the bag hit back?
Negative. Do weights hit back? No.
So just, you know, we kind of...
Sweep the leg.
We kind of went off topic, but, you know, basically those are the things I feel like you should look for.
So, Joff, what are your some main bullet points to look for in a martial arts school? Go.
Coach, cleanliness, community, and chicks with big tits.
And how much things cost.
And if there's a guy who will sell you steroids.
I mean, if that's what you're into.
Bro, chlorophyll, more like borophyll.
So this has been your BGMT podcast, filling you in on some things to look for in a martial arts school. Between me and Joffer, we have over 25 years of experience in martial arts. We've been all around the world. We've trained all different countries and places. Our opinions are a little valid. So thank you for tuning in. And Joff, I got a question for you.
Yeah, I got it. Okay.
Who has given you the worst haircut?
I would say John Maz.
You're welcome.
All right, peace.